Okay, so we are going to discuss various aspects of radiation carcinogenesis. So today we are going to give you a brief history of radiation and radiation induced damage and what most of the in terms of cancer and what are the bystander effects of radiation and how you detect damage caused by radiation to DNA. And once DNA is damaged, what is the different stages of carcinogenesis and how people have created modern study carcinogenesis. And then what is the mechanistic aspects and the role of oncogene and tumor suppressor genes. And then what are the risk factors and then the symptoms and the epidemiology. So there is like more than 100 years ago, radiation was discovered by Röntgen. So while he was working on some kind of fluorescence related instruments, and then basically at that time he discovered that some unknown radiation coming out and then basically detected in the vein of the hand and he can see the image of the bone. So that was just the story of X-ray, and because he don't know what to tell them, we just named them isolates. Later, Henry Becker discovered the radioactivity, and then at alpha and beta ray were discovered by Rutherford, and later different like a Curie discovered radioactive sources like polonium and radium. And because at that time nobody knew much about radiation, but in the consequence of radiation, most of the researchers they were exposed to so much radiation around them because they just work in the same place and they just even exposed their own hand, you know. And so in that way basically immediately within 4 or 5 years they also report of some kind of problem begin to shift, especially like the first report of radiation induced them. Skin cancer was reported in 1902, and when leukemia was in 1911, even it is believed that my theory and her daughter were also exposed too much of radiation and caused because of leukemia. So in that sense, you can say even though there is a lot of, you can say, service they have done to the scientific community, but at the same time, they have been exposed to a lot of radiation that may be detrimental to their life. So, what are the different types of radiation? So, the radiation can be either ionizing radiation, means between ions, or can be non ionizing radiation. So, in ionizing radiation, you have alpha particles, beta particles, neutrons, gamma rays, and X rays. In non ionizing radiation, you have a microwave, visible light, radio waves, UV radiation, except shortwave. So, if you look at the wavelength, so this is wavelength. Once wavelength decreases, and you can see increased frequency. So these are the high frequency and reduced wavelength that they have more energy, they can have more penetration power, they have gamma rays and X rays. And then you have the different, depending upon wavelength frequency, they have determined what the level of energy they will have. And so here we again this is a classified ionizing and non-ionizing radiation. So mostly this part ultraviolet, some part of ultraviolet light, X-ray and gamma ray, they are mostly ionizing radiation, the rest of non-ionizing radiation. So visible light and similarly you will be able to see they are ionizing radiation. So now we know that there are radiation, and once you know something, you want to see how you can measure it and how to get some work with it. So that's why basically in the beginning they found ways to how basically detect these radiation. So different units and dosage have been proposed. Like the, in terms of activity, you can say quantity of radioactive ions basically that determine the rate of which decay occurs with certain amount of radionuclides. So there are in the early time they do the theory, aggregate units. So in this one they correspond to 3.7 newton per 10 radio of occupation degree per second. And later several SI units, several units have been used, and that basically corresponds to 1 disintegration of a nucleotide per second. So what we do the trouble is that in my test, the argument is the quantum energy. And that energy, basically, you can measure it. So, energy imparted per unit mass by ionizing radiation to any specific matter, that's called a Joule. And this one also, basically, has two units. In the beginning, they have rad units, and later they discovered that a grain, and they have SI units to measure the Joule. So, a Joule is different than biological approach. So, the relative biological effectiveness means to get the same biological effect. Let's say, for example, there are different X rays, gamma rays, alpha, beta, and they have different penetration power and they require different energy in different ways. So, to have the same effect, let's say they need the same biological effect. So, in that way, basically, no matter which kind of radiation you have, you can measure the same consequence. So that's why they define the relative biological effectiveness unit. And this is their old unit by them, and now they have Siemens unit. So once this radiation travels from one place to another, they have this kind of dipolic energy. So it's also called linear energy transfer, how the dipolic energy. And this could be actually dependent upon like energy of the electromagnetic wave, and then depending upon the quality of the radiation. Like for example, you have X-rays and gamma rays. They are sparsely ionizing, but they are highly penetrating. As compared to beta particle, alpha particle, and mu. So higher the energy, you have reduced ionization. So here, like alpha particles are being densely ionized as compared to X-ray and beta. So more sparsely ionizing means that they have more penetrating effect. So if you want to compare how basically from the first you observe, and it's important to know what kind of radiation you're working with. So if you have, let's say, X-ray and gamma rays sources, that means they have sparsely ionizing radiation, but they are highly penetrating. So because of this high penetration power, you want to protect yourself. So for that, there need to be different level of protection measure when you work with different kind of radiation. Like for example, alpha particles. Even small piece of paper can block the alpha particles. It will not cross through this small piece of paper. Beta particles can cross that small piece of paper, but it cannot cross immune form. And similarly, X-rays and beta gamma rays can cross in ammonium, and then you need very, very strong protector so that you can be not exposed to the radiation. So you can imagine that in time you can be in X-rays and working in the same room and exposing themselves, they have been, I mean, how long they might have been exposed, and most of the time the whole body, even say radiation, they might have been exposed. You know? So and that's why they have had a problem as you work. And because in olden time there were a lot of wires accidents that basically either intentionally or not intentionally, like atomic bomb survivors, they have been exposed to a lot of radiation. There also have been a lot of accidents, especially the facilities that they have radiation to create energy. So those are places they have a lot of similar facilities to expose it to humans. And of course, people were working in a hospital that involved in treatment of patients, and those kind of patients as well as in health professionals they have been exposed to radiation. So early cases of you can say problems that were noted before, like skin cancer in early aged workers, there are a lot of cases of that. And people who work in mines, like uranium mines, so those people basically there is no ventilation. So in that way they basically exposed to a lot of radiation, uranium, and that leads to a lot of lung cancer in those workers. And olden time, you might remember that people used to have watch the dial pin with some kind of glow, and those people used to actually sometimes stung to make the watch glow, and those kind of things. And also people that painters, they were exposed to a lot of radiation. And even in 30s and 40s, people used to have like a thorium dioxide radio contrast agent to for some diagnosis purpose, and those patients they have been exposed to a lot of radiation. And later cases of human experience, you can say, like in 1940 and onward, you have the bomb and Hiroshima, Nagasaki, and then other kind of medical treatment, like for example, treatment of interleukin, spondylitis. They had problems with their spine, and then using radiation treatment, and then a lot of patients being exposed. And leukemia in radiologists who people who worked, and of course like this they have different kind of like I would say majority of X-ray people who use X-ray treatment either for diagnosis or for treatment, both health professionals as well as patients have been exposed to different kind of different kind and level of radiation, and that leads to a lot of So why radiation exposure caused tumor genesis? So in terms of a cancer related disease, and then you have a DNA molecule, once this is exposed to various agents including for example ionizing radiation, so here you have double stranded break. And once these so these ionizing radiation will be the break, that can be repaired. So not that it cannot repair, but it's repaired, and that can lead to fixed up the damage. However, if the damage is not repaired, that will lead to basically misreplication of aberrant chromosome, and then later basically propagation of promoting that they have mutation or a deletion, and that is going to lead to cancer. DNA damage can also ultimately be repaired. If not repaired, it can also can go cell cycle arrest, and that also causes aging or cell death. So you can detect this DNA damage. The various methods you can detect this that damage to DNA. And simple, very easy way to understand, you can take tissue of cell and then you isolate DNA. And then use this enzyme glycosylate enzyme that has been fixed damage, and the fixed part will break, and then ultimately it will end in an erosion, and then you can see this near and that second method then there is damage. In addition to this, you can also use immunohistochemistry, immunofluorescence method, gamma HTAF staining, and then you can count on the profile, and then you can see how whether the damage is there or not. And this is certainly, if you look at it, this is controlled by little damage, and within 15 minutes you have a lot of damage. And over time, you see reduced level of damage. So this suggests that once there is damage, very fast there is a DNA damage repair response. And because of DNA damage repair response, you have repair of the damage, some part of the DNA damage, but it still, it might, sometimes it may take longer time, but at least you can start seeing the repair process very fast. And but it's always generally most of the time going to be more than the upper ground level. So in that case, when people are exposed to DNA damage, agents, damaging agents, in this case, let's say for example radiation, they are going to have some kind of damage that will not be repaired. And so that kind of, and then you are also predicted by DNA damage by the merger, so like tail movement. And then also the machine is going to be measured. Like a commutation, you can get here in this case the normal mismatch you are balanced, and then you do the cross matching again, and then you can reduce it. So once the DNA is damaged, this is sensed very fast. That means the sensing mechanism is very fast. When it is done, and there are different level of this mechanism. So very early DNA damage can say the other little protein that participate in sensing the damage. And then they have set a next level of protein that become activated, like oxygen kinases, like ATM and ATR. And this can be activated ATM by double standard break, ATR by single standard break. And once this ATM and ATR are activated, they lead to activation of different mediator like CHK1 and CHK2, and then you have a different effective protein like CHK53 and other proteins. So in that way, basically, you have a very robust response mechanism like the sensitizers, and that activates the DNA damage repair and the process. So, of course, there are multiple ways you can actually define how this is going to be repaired, how this is going to be attenuated. But most of the time, you have different three major mechanisms to attenuate that DNA damage. So once there is a radiation-mediated damage, or any other therapeutic agent that can induce damage to cells, you have an increased level of reactive oxygen species. So this is caused by, let's say, agent that induce anaerobic reactive oxygen. Once these reactive oxygen species are formed, they basically attack various macromolecules. So in this case, DNA, for example. So before the reactive oxygen species can attack DNA molecule, there is a robust antioxidant system, and that basically quench the reactive oxygen species. So, like for example, glutathione, vitamins, and various radical scavengers, they basically attenuate the level of reactive oxygen species. So, in that way, basically, this is the first detection mechanism of any individual once they are diagnosed with the drug of radiation. And if the antioxidant system is not strong enough, or you can say not sufficient, that will lead to some DNA molecule will be affected, and then in that case you will have some damage to DNA. Then the second deficiency mechanism comes in the repair mechanism. So in this case again you have a different kind of repair mechanism depending upon damage type. So you have a homologous repair mechanism, and you have the physical repair, you have exchange repair. So multiple repair mechanisms that are going to make fix the damage in the DNA molecule. And if damage is fixed, then there is no problem with the repair. However, if damage is not fixed, or there is persistent damage, that means that there is continuous source, especially when there is accident or when there is any, let's say, for example, people are continuously exposed to some kind of radiation. In that case, there is going to be a problem because they cannot have continuous damage that cannot be repaired. So in that case, you will have persistent damage that will lead to two options. Either this can go to third set of different mechanism, means you have a cell death. So that means the damaged cell will be removed because of that. So in that case, this will, you can say it's not problem for individual, but of course, if damage is not that, and then you have a replication of damaged DNA, and there will be ways to happen upon us. So now we know that it depends upon sense and event, but in Vidyajapur, persistent genital age, and that leads to accumulation of the genital age in the cell, and that ultimately leads to cancer. In the meantime, it's also causing that, as we have said before, that there is a problem with the genital age, but in the affluent system, or it will be failed. Or there is a cellular mechanism that kicks in and that will reduce the brain cells, which will remove the chemical from the system. And that actually, you can say about the injury damage, it accumulates atrium, and then it will take 162. Then there is two options, the other accumulates P53 and ATF. So both P53 can be, have two functions. It can have a transcriptional dependent function, means the cellular activated certain proteins that is important for cellular problems, like for example, VAGs and the PARP1. So these certainly get accumulated into certain of these proteins, and that ultimately will induce cellular problems. And the TF activation can also lead to activation of these proteins. So in that way, you can say transcriptional dependent function of the process induction by the damage. And in P53 can also directly participate in apoptosis process by interacting with various pro-apoptotic protein like VAGs and VAGs, and that will ultimately also lead to release of cytochrome C from mitochondria and then receive the energy. So in addition to apoptotic cellular, reactive oxygen species, as the radiation can also lead to autophagic cells. So when there is a radiation that can induce autophagosome formation, and then lysosome comes attached to the autophagosome, and then it will die in the content of the cell, and then ultimately can happen cell death. So autophagic cell death can be beneficial for tumorigenesis, and can be also tumor-promoting. So if you look at here, so you have here when there is autophagy induction, that will reduce the level of RAS. That means reduce level of RAS that ultimately will reduce level of damage. So in that sense, you can say autophagy in the beginning is an anti-tumor effect. That means if you have a, because of radiation, you have an autophagy activation, and that ultimately will lead to basically there will be no initial cell transformation. That means in that sense, this is a kind of beneficial for not having it will not induce tumor formation. But once tumor is formed, then this can be very interesting different role. You can say that because in this case now RAS has two functions. RAS also participates in the different level of RAS. You have a low level of RAS that is important for cellular signaling. And then you have high level of RAS that basically can induce cellular. So if you have a autophagy activation that will reduce the level of RAS, so in that case, now the level of RAS that is toxic to cell, that basically will be removed by autophagy. So that means if you have more, if you don't have autophagy, you have high level of RAS, then they can activate cellular in cancer transform cells, and that will, you can say, reduce or attenuate promotion effect. But however, if you have a more autophagy, that will block RAS production. So that means the level of RAS is not high enough that can reduce toxicity. So that means you will have some RAS that will be there, but it's not above the threshold, it will not cause cells to transform cells. So in that way, you can say that autophagy induction in tumor cells is kind of pro-tumorigenic. So that means if you have, that's why a lot of times people have to use two mechanisms. In order to kill cancer cells, they use apoptosis. At the same time, they inhibit autophagy. So in that way, when you inhibit autophagy, basically you kind of block into the state. So combination of both autophagy inhibition and apoptosis induction can be actually beneficial to induce cells. So especially when you have anti-cancer agents, they induce autophagy. So that means, and that's why they are not very effective, because they're inducing autophagy, that means this might actually lead to reduced level of RAS and then that means don't die. So this you can say in that sense, when tumor is already initiated, there is promotion and progression, and at a second stage, autophagic induction is totally limited. So once DNA is damaged, this can have multiple complications can happen. Like for example, ionizing radiation will cause double-stranded break, and that will cause the sticky end, that these sticky end can join to the original configuration, then the point, but when it fails to join, that will cause deletion, and broken end may join, literally wrong reason after the cell, and that will lead to a problem, like for example in this case. So here there is a radiation effect, and that is a double-stranded break. And in this case now, you have two chromosomes attached to each other and make a diasynchronous chromosome. So in that way, that creates a problem, and at the same time here you have a sex problem. So this, depending upon how the broken fragments stick together, that leads to the various chromosome abnormalities. Similarly, if you have a damage to here, and then you can have a ring formation, or you can have a sexual chromosome. So here, like this is a ring formation, and then you have a sexual chromosome. So in that way, basically, you can have a multiple situations where you can have a DNA diasynchronous, or ring chromosome, or you have a sexual chromosome. And this can also lead to translocation. So like here, for example, you have a wrong orientation that can lead to basically different fragments, and that can lead to translocation, and you can have a different area of DNA that could lead to either deletion of some fragments, or can lead to wrong orientation. So these events ultimately leads to chromosomal aberration, and that will lead to damage to the DNA making it towards the original problem. So we talk about DNA damage to the cells that have been exposed to the DNA. So what happens to the neighboring cells? So it happens that especially now we have very sophisticated equipment that can deliver radiation directly to the human tissue. But in olden times, even now also, we don't have very precise that it is supposed to. There's always chance that you will have some non-clotting cells will be exposed to radiation. And some cells will not be exposed to radiation. So it happens that not only the cells that is exposed to radiation are affected there, but the neighboring cells can also be damaged and leads to basically genomic instability. So how that happens? So this is a you can say direct the cell that is affected. So you can see that the effect, damage effect, is basically part of the dose response curve. So that means you have more radiation dose, you have more damage to the cell that is exposed to radiation. In this case, you have bystander effect. So in this case, you can say that upon increasing dose, we do not see the increasing effect. The effect is shown that after that threshold, even if you have high dosage of radiation, that is not going to cause more damage after the second dose. So like for example, in this case, if I have up to 1 gram, you have this kind of a growth effect. After that, it becomes unclear to us, so we don't see much increasing damage in terms of like damaging effect of neighboring cells. So, how this damage comes from the first from the damaged cells to the neighboring cells. So, there are different mechanisms of transfer out of just the individual. So this is yourself that has been exposed to many areas. There are two major ways that can affect the neighboring cells. Through the gap junction, this can actually leads to through gap junction, the neighboring cells can become affected. And that happens because once through the junction, you have violated reactive oxygen species formation in the neighboring cells. And when these reactive oxygen species are formed, so now here you have two sequences. What the reactive oxygen species does, let's say you pass in the air, right? It can also damage to mitochondria. And when mitochondria damage, this can also lead to high level of reactive oxygen species. So you got some little bit damage, and because remember there is not only one mitochondria, there are a lot of mitochondria. So you have some reactive oxygen species that damage mitochondria, and mitochondria is now not functioning properly, and you have a high level of reactive oxygen species because mitochondria is damaged, then you have a more reactive oxygen species, and that ultimately will lead to damage to the And also you have a lot of signaling that can happen because of the need of hydrogen. So once cells are damaged, they release a lot of cytokines like IL-8, beta, alpha, and these cytokines either can be basically released by even direct cells, the affected cells, or they can also be released by macrophages. So once you have these macrophages, they can actually release to the release of all these cytokines. And these cytokines, now they can all over. So basically they not just only the immediate neighboring cells, but they can also go to multiple surrounding cells where they can find the receptor and they can affect cells, not only in the base closed cells like gut junction, but also various other cells surrounding the medium, they can actually affect. And this can also, you can go to, let's say, not only the immediate area, it can also move to different places. So let's say, for example, you have very high level of cytokine production because of the damage to the cells. And a lot of mitochondria have been damaged. And that leads to release of various cytokines that can move not only to the same area, but also to the part of the cell surrounding. So in that way, basically, when you have a damage to cell, that can have not only just only one cell that can be affected, whole tissue environment can be affected, and that ultimately will lead to damage to the surrounding tissue. And this sometimes can be more problematic because you have a continuous damage that can be basically low dose, and can be impossible that you have repeated damage because of either gas junction or because of cytokine. So in both ways, basically, you have repeated exposure of radioactive oxygen species and damage, and that can lead to the damage from human and non-human teeth and non-human. So therefore, the very precise, it's important to deliver drugs to precisely to the tumor tissue so that they won't get affected analysis. And of course, this damage can happen in the area of patients, and this is the damage, developing damage, as we know that can be not just in 1 year or 5 years, process it takes years to develop. And this is just an example of how long it takes to develop different kind of tumor. Like, for example, in men, you have majority in prostate. After 55, you have high level of prostate cancer, prostate cancer in men. And in women, you have mostly later age of their life, they have breast cancer. So, if you look at the age at 55, you have quite high level of breast cancer in women, and similarly you have a lot of prostate cancer cases in the area. So this suggests that most of the epithelial type of cancer, they have very long latent TB. So like for example here in this case, colon cancer cells can take maybe 5 to 20 years to just develop the initiation process. And then that will develop next 5 to 15 years to develop cancer. So that means if somebody has DNA damage or their cells are transformed 30, 30, 40 years ago, they may have cancer at the stage of their life. So that means it's a so long process that allow us to get the target to prevent it to happen. So that's why if you think about compare heart disease versus this one, this can be actually any stage of it, because you can actually block human promotion at this pre-cancer state if you have some mechanism to prevent it. So this is really providing long window for you to prevent tumorigenesis problems, especially to become cancer. So like this, you have somewhere between 10 to 40 years develop different kind of cancer, especially the clinical cancer. But of course, then leukemia and lymphoma, they are really faster. So, and there are different classes we discussed, when you see a finish stage, and then the promotion and improvement. So what happened to different stages after the journey? So in the initial stage, what do you think is important? The damage is important. So that means if any individual, any cell is not damaged, that means it will not lead to any tumor formation. So there is always chance this can happen either through radiation, that may be a double ascending rate, as to other kind of exogenous or endogenous issues that can lead to DNA deformation. And once you have DNA deformation, that will slowly and slowly lead to chances to get cancer formation. Or if you have mutation in an oncogene, and that can lead to also initiate the process of mutation. So overall, this initiation process can happen long time ago before you notice it. So this can be somewhere between 5 to 15, 20 years. This can just remain like this in the initiation phase. And then in promotion phase. So now the cell that has been damaged here, this is when they initiate it, it goes to various epigenetic cross. So now at this stage, if somebody has prevented, so here various things may come to picture. Depending upon the lifestyle of individual, this can be either emergencies never happen, or it can be actually initiated and it can be fast. So like so that is epigenetic play a very important role in the promotion system. And of course other various kind of mutation and inactivation of tumor suppressor gene, activation of oncogene, various things that may happen multiple times in this phase, promotion phase, and that ultimately leads to the next phase progression. So in progression phase, again, you have other mutation, lack of heterogeneity, and also you have ultimately you have invasion, metastasis, and this is three mutation. So quite a bit of gene amplification that can happen in progression phase to make it more progressive stage of the disease. So if you look at the overview, if you look at, so this is external exposure, that can be radiation, that can be any kind of chemotherapeutic agent, or it can be also internal exposure or metabolic activation. So it's not that only radiation causes tumor, but yes, it can lead to DNA damage. And once you have this DNA damage, and then ultimately, we discussed before, that can be fixed and the cell repaired, and then you, no problem, but after, if not repaired properly, this can actually initiate the process here. and then ultimately you have the promotion and protection phase. So overall, it takes 20 to 40 years to develop epithelial tumor. So what are the process or what are the genes that are important for tumorigenesis? So two kind of you can say genes are important, one is called oncogenes. These are the only protein that is basically already in dormant state in an individual. And you have a tumor suppressor gene that basically they are functional in normal individual. So once the environment has a proton oncogene, tumor suppressor gene does basically to the cross. So let's say for example you have a activation of proton oncogene like CMYK, AGA, and that ultimately will start the process. And then you still have checkpoint like tumor suppressor. Remember we talked about role of RB and role of WT53 that are important to check the progression of tumor. So if you have these protein, tumor suppressor protein are functionally active, even if you have oncogene activation, this mechanistic blood process may not consider anything, you are still in dormant state. And sometimes it also happens in a certain virus mediated tumorigenesis. So these viruses are basically high rate promoter of oncogene or promoter of tumor suppressor gene. And basically they direct the process. So this is for example you have certain viruses that can basically activate promotion of oncogene. So now you have high activation of oncogene. Or they can block tumor suppressor gene and that ultimately leads to basically virus chromosomal aberration and division and distribution. So these things can happen due to mutational events in a cell, and that can happen due to basically in the tumor suppressor gene, or you can say in an oncogene. So let's say for example if you have deletion of RB protein and mutation of P53, so that will ultimately lead to basically continuous. If you don't have RB, and that will lead to the type of protein. So, and similarly, if you have mutation in P53, and you have a loss of P53, that will ultimately basically allow, if oncogene is activated, that will ultimately lead to the promotion of the gene. So in that sense, you can say radiation plays a very important role in the study. Oncogene activation, which can amplify also MDM2 will bind the P53, and that will also lead to the study. Also, this can also lead to the discussion of mutation P53. So there are multiple events that can happen during this process. Oncogene activation and suppression of tumor suppression of function of tumor suppression protein. So these things ultimately will lead to tumorigenesis. So there are four major types of tumor hypophysis of the cell. So like chromosomal damage in normal divided cell. That's possible. Second step, once it's divided, is differentiates to perform function. So the defect in differentiation that will lead to complication. Are the gene defects that can lead to mutation of the gene? Are the defects? So there are other things like, for example, if you have a low or high level of radiation exposure, that can lead to chromosomal aberration in normal cells. And these cells, normal cells, can undergo cell death. They will divide and differentiate, and they carry the cells and the damage. And then now these cells, if they differentiate cells, can also lead to ultimately to a few concurrent cells. If they develop defects in differentiation, that means they basically continue to be transformed and then ultimately leads to the same, to the new picture. So you can say that once they get damaged, if that self is not removed, that will ultimately lead to division of that self and the accumulation of the self. And so that ultimately will lead to division of higher self and leads to our plastic state. And some of the self now at the plastic state, they become get the more common limitation, and then ultimately that leads to a higher stage of problem. So if you look at here, so this is a simple model of colon-tumor model. So this is a normal mutation. So in the first mutation that can happen, that's for example loss mutation, and that can lead to the defect in differentiation, and then it leads to a normal formation, and then this is benign tumor, and then you have various other events that occur here, like P53 and mutation in the DNA gene. So if you look at the multiple events that can happen from normal cells to become metastatic cancer. And this is the process of long time to develop to begin. So here again you have gamma ray, X-rays, and non-RNA particles that can lead to anagation and excitation of excitation, and that leads to physical formation, that can lead to DNA damage, and this DNA damage can lead to either you can say malignant transformation and cancer, and this can also lead to whether the repair process can take place, but it's not going to lead to a certain different kind of defects. So similarly, like you do skin carcinogenesis, the similar event that takes place there, you have anyway radiation that can cause damage to the molecule, DNA damage. So here you have a jet formation, and this air formation that ultimately leads to the response, and that can lead to the survival. After that, ultimately, if not the proper distinguished DNA damage. So there are a lot of preventive agents people use to prevent different kind of carcinogenesis process. Like for example, skin. There are different kind of sunscreen that people use, and that will kind of prevent the process and avoid the carcinogenesis in people. So now we know that DNA damage or an aggregation called DNA damage, and that can lead to accumulation of oncogene, and that can lead to elimination of tumor suppressor from the disease. And so there, and we also discussed the similarity. So what are the risk factors that can determine whether how this is important for the disease process? So if I am to absolute this model, of course if you have radiation that is above the ground level, that will lead to basically incidence of high incidence of cancer. Of course, similarly you have, that means if you have more exposure, you have more basically tumorigenesis. Like for example, leukemia, if you have more exposure, that will lead to basically high level of leukemia. And once you have above the ground level, that can also lead to the high level of tumor, tumorigenesis in people. And this is dependent upon dose, depending upon what time it is, what age it is post, and how long it was exposed, and also it's depending upon gender. So, of course, leukemia has a status frequency of about 5 years, that means it develops very fast. The solid tumor, they have at least 20 or 4 years after irradiation. So, if you consider age as a risk factor, so here there are three different conditions. So, here If somebody is called as, let's say, for example, daily earning of their life, as compared to individual who actually is called mid-field of their life, as compared to the later field of life. So the people who have been exposed to radiation early, they will develop tumor, more chances of this as compared to the people who have been exposed to later part of their life. And why is that? Normally we talk about the latency period, right? So that means that if somebody is exposed at early time point, let's say when they are 10, 15 years old, as compared to someone exposed at 50 years old. So if it takes to develop 20, 30 years, by the time person dies or to develop cancer, he will be 80, 85. So that person, he or she may die before whereas people who have been exposed to early age of their life, they are very, you can say, highly as compared to the people who are exposed to later stage. That's why the cleaning up the radioactive material in a lot of cases, they don't allow especially young adults and children, especially people who are more than 50, 55, they will participate in the cleaning, so that even if they are exposed to high radiation, they will not have that much complications in their life as compared to people who are at so. And also it depends upon how many times people have been exposed. So let's say, for example, if somebody is exposed when one time, let's say something happened, it's not going to cause. It may cause, but it's not the chances of being less. As compared to the same person exposed to multiple times. So like, for example, in this case, if a single exposure time, that would be two, this much is covered. Whereas if there is a second exposure, that relates to higher level of and if there is also a third time exposure, that relates to more higher. So if you see here, multiple exposure can lead to higher level of tumor. And so if you see here, so if the only initiation follows, just you can say, early age, your high incidence of habit as compared to late age, your low. And the promotion, again, you have a certain any age, if you have second load or third load, you can just high level of tumor. And so the combination of this leads to the certain if you have initiation and promotion both with multiple exposure, that will lead to higher exposure to higher chances to the process. Okay, so also this is here again. So this is here male versus female. So here you can say female are more prone to tumorigenesis as compared to men. And different organ types, they also have some difference. So like example, in this case you have this factor that actually also play a role, you know, then they also play a role in determining them. This factor for, like, for example, bladder cancer and breast cancer, there is a higher chance of in these organ types compared to other organs. So I think this is just a kind of lowest dose that many people have come up with, that means this much dose can lead to cancer risk, and that will be also associated with mortality. And so overall, of course, there is no threshold. That means how much radiation you need to get to the end. It is not, there is no threshold, but of course, anybody can get affected, even if they're exposed to some kind of radiation. And of course, this continues to our life, and people are high risk at early age as compared to this. So these things you can also actually test in laboratory using a cell culture model. So let's say, for example, if you have a different dosage of radiation that you want to see whether cells are transformed or not, you can actually do a simple test here, like you can see the dose dependent effect, and this can be this different cells can respond differently as well. And we talk about the multiple promotion and initiation. So these can also be measured very easily in a cell culture model. So like for example, in this case you have single exposure, and in these dose you have this kind of a transformation event that can take the cell. However, if you use the same dose, like here is 1 gram, and if you do one time, the transformation even gets a different level. But if you give 0.5 gram, two times, not just one time. So in that sense, you give same amount of radiation dose, but multiple of two, you have high level of transformation as compared to single 1 gram. And similarly, if you increase more, you can. So in that sense, this has definitely proved that process is that the same individual is exposed multiple times, there is always chance that that person will have a high chance of this cancer as compared to person who is only one time. And here again, you have that promotion. So let's say, for example, this case is one radiation system. And if you have a promotion, you can calculate to the other person who is to get the higher transformation level. So, even though we know that radiation therapy is very important, especially for PC solid cancer, and but this can also be used for a lot of secondary cancer, and that definitely also a serious problem of radiation therapy. I am a chemotherapy. So people who have been treated with, let's say, DNA damaging agents like topoxide and natalizumab, that probably always can be DNA damaging agent. And also people undergoing radiation therapy, that also leads to basically damage to DNA. And that can be because even though we have a lot of sophisticated equipment to deliver to the specific area of tumor tissue, but as we discussed that they also bystander effect, and also they are not so much precise that you will have no damage to the tissue. So that means that there will be always some damage to some tissue, either through diet or through bystander. So that means that there is always chance for a recurrence of radiation induced secondary kind of impairments. So that's why dosing is very important. And of course, you cannot have any control in this because you cannot just say, okay, how much dose you give to one individual to find out whether the one is doing this or not, because you cannot test these things in humans. And these things cannot be applicable to mouse model because mouse doesn't need that long. So in that sense, these things you have to just test. There is no control, but they come in an analysis of the treatment and patient observation. They basically come from the idea that people who have undergone treatment, maybe if they have gone treatment, let's say, for example, other stage of their life, they may get taken to tumor later stage of their life. So, just simple example, if you have the risk of radiation versus radiation therapy mortality, so the survival rate is kind of 5 years survival rate, 10 years survival rate, they have come up. And then you have cancer that after that treatment you get a secondary cancer. And here you can say, let's say, if that means when they're exposed to radiation therapy, later stage of their life they have a secondary cancer. And that's why you have eventually at the time point you have not been death in patient, but later you will have high level of the interest in the patient. So yes, you have two different combinations, three different conditions. So in this case, you have a collecting agent, and a collecting agent are just like a chemotherapy agent. And this one, once I even use the topotide factor, you see if you get these kind of chemotherapeutic agents, you will have certain risk of the treatment. And this is likely also leads to certain risk of the treatment. And if somebody has gone the DSM and chemotherapy, that will lead to higher incidence of that. So these data you can say carefully have been adjusted to tuberculosis because people might be in tuberculosis, those things have been really considered. So of course there is no control here, but it's kind of overall analysis of the cases allow us to predict that the always chance for secondary cancer when treatment with radiation therapy or treatment with any kind of, but of course it cannot be more big change because that's what that will be have. So that means that we need for agent that more safer as compared to the radiation therapy. So I think we have covered most of the aspects of radiation, how it cause damage, how it can repair, and what are the signaling that takes place, and what are the stages, the intermediates, and how the disease can have effect in the therapy response, and how we get to the cancer. So do you guys have any questions for today? Alright? Okay? Happy Thanksgiving, enjoy your holiday, and all the best for yourself.